Okay, Dean.
Okay, good morning. This is Dean Potter. I'm chair of the Washington Real Estate Appraiser Commission currently, and it is now 9:04, and I'm calling the Real Estate Appraiser Commission to meeting, the meeting to order. It's the August 18th, 2022 meeting. The board will provide an opportunity for public comment during the meeting as a courtesy. We encourage participants to mute their mics and turn their cameras off when you are not speaking. My camera is off due to technical difficulties, so that's not going to be an issue for me. to reduce the background noise when others are speaking and have the focus directly on the commissioners during the meeting. One challenge is remembering to unmute your mic when you are speaking. Also, for board members to help us capture information correctly, please state your name when making comments. Thank you. Sherry, would you please call the roll? And
yes. First, can you guys see the can you see the packet? Okay, thanks, Heather. Okay, thanks, Commissioner Potter. So, Dean Potter?
Here.
Scott Beathen?
Here.
Claire Elston?
Here.
Heather Sullivan?
Here.
Cheryl Niddle?
Present.
And Stan Sador?
Here.
Thank you. And then we'll move on to staff. Deborah Allenbaugh?
Present.
Catherine?
Present.
Thanks, Catherine. Tanya? I don't think she's here. Mahua?
Present.
Tim?
Here.
Mike? George?
Here.
Is Anissa here? Or Carly? Did I miss anybody? Whoops, sorry. Did I miss anybody?
Ben is here, but Carly and Anissa.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Commissioner Potter, back to you.
Okay. Everyone got their agenda in the packet sent to them. I think I looked at the order of the agenda. Appears okay to me. Are there any changes that you want to make in the order of the agenda? If not, I'm looking for a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So move, Stan Sedor.
Second.
Second, Cheryl Niddle.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. In your packet also, you had the copy of the minutes of the May 19, 2022 meeting. I looked them over. They appear to be a good representation of what occurred at our meeting. Anyone have any changes, deletions, amendments, additions to the meeting minutes? If none, I'm looking for a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
Cedor, Commissioner Sedor, so move.
A second?
I second. Heather Sullivan.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Now we move on to review of communications, and that's Deborah. And I wanted to make a note just a second, just before Deborah speaks. I wanted to make a note that we got a couple of communications after the agenda was set, and those will be responded to or processed in whatever fashion is appropriate in our next meeting. If we get communications in after the agenda is set, it's a little problematic to incorporate them into the consideration of communications in the current meeting. So if you sent something in the last couple of weeks and don't hear it discussed today by Deborah, then it will be forwarded to the next meeting or dispensed with in some other fashion. Go ahead, Deborah.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. Sherry, can you move forward on the slide deck, please?
Mm-hmm. What is it? Are you looking for the communication?
Yeah. Did we have any communications that made it into this packet?
Yes, there are.
Yep. Can you open those, please?
Yep. Was that the one you were talking about? This one?
Nope.
Nope.
Oh, we had some emails from Bob Masuto.
Right. Hang on. Hang on one second. I'm going to stop sharing. Well, if you want to go and I'll get that up. Sorry.
We'll give
one
it just
on
a second.
Page, one is on page 13.
Got it.
And there's 12 has a reference. 12 and 13, I think.
Okay, so do we want to continue with the agenda as it is, and then we can talk about those where they are?
Well, I don't think it matters where they are in the packet. I think we have to honor the order of the agenda. So
yes, pull it up, page 13.
There were two emails from Bob Masuto. One had to do with the trainee experience log complaint.
Right.
And the other one was had to do with blacklisting appraisals.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, Dean, are you able to see the communication that's on the screen at the moment?
Right. That's the experience log complaint.
Correct. Okay. So that has been brought to the attention of our licensing unit. And so this communication, we did a little bit of research here at the department to try and determine, you know, what from a historic perspective, was there a reason that we were including this, working with the licensing unit. And Mike George is on the call. He reached out to our associates with the AQB and determined there was really no reason to include that. So we are working, and Mike, are you able to give an update on yep. where we're at with the form?
Yeah, it's already done. So for all those on this call, reach out to the AQB, talk with them. You know, our goal is to, if we don't need to collect certain data, we're not going to. If it's not required, mm-hmm. not going to collect it. And that particular, the data that Bob talks about in this particular email, reach out to them, and it's not a requirement. And so with that, it's not a problem. We took it right off the experience log, and it's already done.
So.
Okay, so that one's resolved, right?
That has been resolved. Any okay. questions from the commission?
Did we send out a notification to let the constituents know it's been updated or changed?
No, that's coming. We haven't sent out because it just got changed, I think, about a week ago or so. We'll work on sending it out through Listserv. I know that Bob has already sent something out to the constituents that he communicates with, but we'll send out an official one through Listserv as well.
And just from a administration side of things, if they've already started on a different log, do they just switch over?
No, we'll still accept the old logs. Not a okay. problem. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, and so on page, Sherry, do you want to move forward to the next communication that was received? Oh, go back. You're skipping around.
That one?
One more
back.
That one?
Oh, it's an email.
You had an email in the packet.
Okay, hang on. Sorry. One second. Wow. Deb, which one is it we're looking for?
There was another one from Bob Masuto on blacklisting. And it's on, I believe, in the packet, page 13 or 12 or 13. You skipped past it.
I don't believe it was in the packet that I received.
Was it not in the packet?
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I'm looking in the packet and I don't find it in the packet.
But hang on, let me find his email here.
Dean, was this received after we sent out the packet?
No.
No, okay.
No, this was the email in connection with having the real estate agents board address this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I talked about it 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
We
did when we were looking through it. Yeah, it just didn't make it into the packet. So my apologies. We've got a lot going on with the department. We received an email from ACOW in reference to some allegations that there is blacklisting happening with real estate agents against appraisers. So there had been a complaint case that was filed. I believe that it's in an investigation status right now to determine. But what it sounded like it was more of a federal blacklisting and a violation of the Dodd-Frank Act, and really wasn't something that was within our jurisdiction within the real estate program. The request was whether or not this would be something that could be included in the real estate broker core curriculum in terms of unethical practices for real estate brokers. That is a curriculum that is offered. It's a mandatory curriculum offered to real estate brokers every 2 years for their renewal. The Real Estate Commission has not met. So this is something that Bob Masuto has been encouraged to bring up as a commissioner topic when that commission meets.
So you're saying Bob would go to the meeting of the real estate agents, right?
Yeah, you would want to bring that up with the real estate commission as a proposal for that commission to just determine whether it's something that they would like to include in their continuing education core curriculum.
Okay. Bob, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Oh, okay. Hey, did you hear Deborah's discussion this then?
Yes, I did. Can I have a couple minutes, Dean?
Yeah. I was just going to tell you you had a couple minutes.
Oh, thank you. In regard to this blacklisting, here's the file. So it's not something that I'm taking lightly. This is on my radar. We have right now Michael Imes in the meeting with us. He filed a formal complaint with both the state and with the federal government, the CFPB. And on both occasions, he's gotten nothing. Nothing. The state says it's not our problem. And the federal government, they only investigate as far as lending. But when somebody else commits the crime, a buyer, a seller, a real estate agent, whatever the case, there's nobody to report it to. Now I communicated with Lisa Desmaris from the Appraisal Foundation on this particular subject, and she told me that the complaint process should start at the state level. My complaint to her was, you know, we have a federal law that prohibits blacklisting, and that's exactly what it is. It's real estate agents attempting to prevent an appraiser from appraising a property because they're known to come in low on value, which is the whole reason that Dodd-Frank and AIR was written. It's also addressed in Title 12. And to date, it's like I told Lisa, there's no place to really report anybody other than the lender for the violation. So TAF's on board. They're looking for places to address this. But as she said, it starts at the state level. And since we know that we probably will not be able to change state law for this specific complaint, what we are looking for is to educate real estate agents, brokers, and let them know that, A, you're violating several laws, not just Dodd-Frank, not just Title 12. You're also violating the blacklisting law that's in the WAC here in the state of Washington, and you're violating several ethics laws in the real estate ethics or in the real estate laws here in the state of Washington. By educating, we suggest that this be put in the core so that agents and the real estate broker board cannot say, oh, well, we didn't know, or that's not a law in the state of Washington. That's not a real estate broker law in the state of Washington, because that's just BS, folks. It's, you know, it's a federal law. And there's people out here violating.
Bob?
Yes. Yes.
Just so we can, maybe you can incorporate any summary comments in your time on the public comment. But let me ask you this. Are you going to be able to attend the Real Estate Brokers Commission meeting and make this suggestion?
Do we know when that meeting is, Dean?
Mm-hmm. I do not, but Deborah will. Deborah knows everything.
I wish, Dean. That meeting will be on September 22nd, and I believe the meeting time is at 10 a.m. It is posted on our real estate website. It'll have the links for that meeting. It's either a Zoom meeting or a Teams meeting, and you would be able to attend and during the public comment section, make that suggestion to our commissioners.
Okay.
Sure.
And
yeah, I can attend that if somebody can just email me the link.
Sherry, can you email Bob that link when you have a chance?
Yep.
Okay. Bob, I don't mean to cut you off, but we got to kind of keep more focused on our agenda here.
And when we
come around, okay, good. Thank you. Go ahead, Deborah.
Thank you, Dean.
Uh-huh.
I believe that's all the communications, Commissioner Potter.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I would want to make a note that Commissioner Palmer is absent from this meeting. He has an excused absence. I forgot to say that. Okay. Under old business, licensing fees update. That's Deb and Stan. And I assume the two of you have worked out who's going to go first.
I mean, I don't really have anything to add or say at this time other than to ask. I saw the comment that was in our packet that they did not need to do. Maybe I didn't see all of that.
I can help you out, Commissioner Cedar.
Yeah. So there will be increases or there may be.
Let me share some good news with you, which feels great today. We had shared your questions with our budget office, and I think I shared during the last meeting that we have a new budget officer who has joined the department. Part of the work that she has been working on with her team is kind of unraveling where we're at, and particularly in those indirect expenditures. During the analysis, they determined that there was an error in the calculation, the projections for the indirect cost for this program. And what that has resulted in is there will not be fee increases at this time.
Great.
Thank you. Will see when we get to the part where we're looking at the budget reports are getting a little bit more in depth and in detail. And I really appreciate all the feedback that Commissioner Sedor put into writing, because we were able to share those with the budget office so that they were able to create some consistent reports for each of our boards and commissions to share. So they've been doing an amazing job of really unraveling that and helping us to understand the full budget picture, not just for this program, but for all of our programs. So thank you on behalf of the department for that work.
Okay. You're welcome. I appreciate that. I am curious if you could address the last sentence in this license fee update. It says the division will be taking a more holistic approach to fee increases, and it may be that fee increases will still be necessary in October 22. Is that now not the case?
We discovered that that is now not the case. So between the publication of this and the conversations that I had, the last word was this program will not be seeing fee increases.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Stan, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it very much. And all the appraisers in the state of Washington, I assume, appreciate it as well. Trainee experience log update, Deb and Tanya. Did we kind of already cover that, Deb?
I believe that we did. I don't see that Tanya is on this call today.
We already covered it. That's the where we just took off the client name and client number.
Yeah.
So just real quick for those that are like, well, the whole thing's changed. It looks the exact same. We just took off the client name and client phone number. Real small change. Nothing crazy. We'll still accept the old ones also. For those that are questioning that.
Okay, so it can be a mix and match, so nobody has to refill out a form, right?
Nope, they don't have to refill out a form. And the one online is updated, so if you're going to print it, but if you already have, you're working through the one that you have, just keep using the one that you have. It's all good.
Okay, yeah, we had a couple comments on the screen here about people listening in asking about mixing and matching and refilling it. So that's making it easy on everyone. That's a good thing. Okay. Moving on, qualifying and continuing education update, Scott and Heather.
Yep. Commissioner Sullivan, would you like me to just kind of jump out there, if that's okay with you?
Absolutely.
Good. So the long and the short, we made good progress, not as much progress as we would have wished. Summer schedules and summer travel between Commissioner Sullivan and myself, and then just getting everything organized. We did have... So the issue is trying to understand if there are ways that we can better have what I would call portability of education and experience credits, both qualifying and continuing, between the accreditation given by the Department of Revenue, typically for mass appraisal, and the Department of Licensing for real estate appraisers. And so those are the two big topics. So we did have a phone call with the AQB and with some folks from the AQB, some folks from the state, and we explored really what are the questions. And then what they did was they came back and said, could you please give us these questions in writing? So that came back to us. We would have rather have been a little bit further on this, and that's just full disclosure, but Commissioner Sullivan and I have put together some questions. We've got some questions that are into the state, and these are questions actually for the state and kind of vetting, are these kind of the questions that we talked about? Is this way to what we're trying to accomplish? And then we've got a proposed list of questions that will go back to the AQB, I suspect, fairly shortly. And so, again, the goal is to find out if there are ways to have what I would call the ability for folks that are really becoming trained appraisers or who are trained appraisers to be able to supervise other appraisers. What are the criterion? If they're taking education for continuing or qualifying, can they apply to both and how would that work? And right now, we don't have a good mechanism for that, but we're trying to explore how might that look. And so Commissioner Sullivan, please fill in the blanks because she's really the subject matter expert on this anyway.
Yeah, I think just our focus is to get clarification on the AQB requirement that in order to be a supervising appraiser, you have to be state certified, and what that looks like for the mass appraisal discipline. The other thing that we're looking at is the qualifying education for mass appraisal is classified a little bit differently on the AQB website. And so we're hoping to get an understanding of if those are transferable between, I think it's listed as QE for us and CEE for the mass appraisal side of things. So just to determine that they are transferable, and if not, like which ones do count, which ones don't count. So just get a better path forward, a little more clear for those that are from the mass appraisal side looking to get licensed by the Department of Licensing, just what that would entail exactly. So there's not as much gray area.
Okay, so basically this is Commissioner Potter. There's three components. You're looking at qualifying education, that's a great term, Scott, portability. I like that. So the portability of qualifying education from the Department of Revenue. And are you also looking at the assessor organization, the AARO, or the, what is it? The
Bureau?
No, I not AARO. The what?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the it's
IAAO, sorry.
IAAO, yeah, IAAO, yes. Are you looking at the IAAO and the DOR courses for qualifying education and for continuing education? And then, so those are two components, qualifying and continuing education, from those two sources of education. And then you are also looking at the supervisory appraiser component of it, if there is some workaround where a supervisory appraiser does not have to be a certified appraiser. So there's those three components. Is that about summarize what you're doing?
Yeah, and when we say certified, we mean certified with the Department of Licensing.
Right, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, good. I think you're doing a good job for the assessors out there, and I appreciate it. The fact that you didn't get all your work done before this meeting, we have to recognize that you also have a work life elsewhere. So appreciate all your volunteer time on this project. Any summarizing comments? Okay, you guys are done? Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Okay, that concludes the old business. Want to review the master action item list, Sherry?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Potter. So first off, was the email, commissioners, the questions that Stan created around licensing fees, and I did that right after the meeting.
Okay.
The setting up the meeting with the Department of Revenue and AQB qualifying and continuation, that was set up in June. They've met once, and they are there's still work going on there, so that's in progress. I put on the DOL website that continuing education checklist that's on there, and will be updated that as well. So follow up on PAREA minimum AQB, that is in progress. Yes.
Yeah. On that particular item, I've been aware of some interest in that throughout the appraisal community of Washington about the PAREA and the minimum AQB. So what's the status of that? That needs to have a WAC change, that's in progress. Can you give me a little more specifics as to where that is in the public hearing and WAC change process?
Yes, yeah, I think I can have Sandy speak on that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can go ahead and give a quick update on that. We now have the resources in DOL to move this forward. So we have a committee already formed. We have already built the plan, and it has already been submitted to DOL for approval. Once we have that approval, then we'll go ahead and move forward with suggesting the WAC changes, and we'll get that started.
So you do not have the director's acceptance of our recommendation yet. Is that correct?
Not yet, but we're expecting it at any time.
Okay. And then, so if you, let's just look down the road here, because like I say, there's quite a bit of interest in this, in particular, the minimum AQB requirements being put in place. If you, let's say by the middle of September, you have the director's acceptance of our recommendation, what's the timing moving forward as far as the public hearings, and when might we see this as being actual part of the WAC and effectively part of the WAC?
I don't have an actual date for the conclusion of that, because of course we still have to do the CR 101s and the CR 102, but we are moving forward, and we'll be able to get this done as soon as possible.
Okay.
So that's our goal, is we don't want to drag this on any more than it already has been. We now have the resources to get this done, and we are pushing forward. Okay. Very aggressively.
Hey, Sandy, I apologize for being a thorn in your side here, but I'm going to ask you another question. Do you know what the timing is, the filling out the CR 101 and then the 102? Those are pretty simple forms to fill out and that, but that there's a time limit in between the CR 101 and then the CR 102 and the public hearings associated with that. And then there's a period of
30 days, 20 days. So the CR 101 is 30 days prior, then the CR 102 is 20 days prior.
Okay. And then the public hearing would be by Zoom, right? Or Teams or something like that.
We're hoping by Zoom. Yeah.
Okay. By Zoom. Okay. And then how long after the public hearing does it take that you can make this effective?
So we're hopefully within that 31 days.
Okay. So we could have this done by early winter, you think?
Yes.
Okay.
It's quite possible.
Right. Okay.
And we're pushing quite aggressively to get this done.
Before the first snowfall.
Depends on when the first snowfall is.
Well, that.
Because this is Washington, you have to say that.
It may be early, so I wouldn't let any grass grow under your feet. Okay, sounds good. Thank you. Sandy, thank you very much for taking all my questions. I appreciate it. Go ahead, Sherry.
Chair Potter.
Chair Potter?
Yes.
Commissioner Sedor, I'm trying to recall when the DOL works on revising a WAC. I know there's public input and comment sought and received and potentially acted on. Is there a member of the commission or anybody working with DOL in the drafting of the WAC before it's presented to the public, or is that not typical or even needed?
In the past, we've done it two different ways. The appraiser commission has drafted up a WAC rule. And a lot of times that would be situations where there's a WAC rule where we're taking the same rule and tweaking it to be more clear or something like that. When it's a brand new rule like this is going to be on Perea, and therefore that kind of sucks in the minimum AQB requirements too. Generally speaking, that is done by the DOL and the Attorney General's office, because they have to, it is a legal document that it has to be signed off at the Attorney General's office. So I sense, and Sandy, clarify with this if I'm misstating it, but I sense in this case, it's going to be DOL and the AG's office that are going to draw up the wording on Perea and the minimum AQB. requirements. The minimum AQB requirements are just the amending of the current requirements to different time numbers. So is that correct, Sandy?
Yes, sir. At that time, that's the plan right now. Okay. I do expect, though, if needed, that we will bring in members of the commission for their input if needed.
Yeah. And also, Stan, typically one or more members from the appraiser commission attend those public hearings. So we make a statement to affirm that this is a furtherance of a recommendation that the appraiser commission made to the director. So, you know, it might be me as chair, if I'm still chair, and you might attend, or whoever, anyone's welcome to attend. It's a public hearing, but typically at least one or more members of the commission attends those public hearings.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sandy. Thank you, San. Go ahead, Sherry.
Okay. Thank you. And then what was the next one? Provide data on how long it took to process applications and renewals in packet.
I can speak to that, Sherry. I asked our data folks if they could create a report like that, and they've been scratching their heads on it. It doesn't seem like it was as easy as it should be, but we'll keep asking. And so we'll leave that on the in progress. So perhaps at some point someone will figure out, they'll crack the nut on how to get that information for us.
Yeah. Just to weigh in on that, if you think back of when this became an item on our radar, it was at our February meeting, and Commissioner Elston, we were talking about how long it was taking to process mm-hmm. applications and renewals, and there was quite a bit of focus on the extensive amount of time that it took to process that. Mm-hmm. And there were some discussions about how the process could be made simpler and facilitate it and speed it up and so forth and so on. And Commissioner Elston, in her great wisdom, said it might be a good idea to have the DOL report to us how long it has been taking to process applications. So we have some feedback and are able to monitor this do our job as a mm-hmm. liaison between the appraisal community and the DOL. I always appreciated Commissioner Elston's thoughtful consideration of that it was so on target that would be a good way to monitor it. So I would, I know you can't push a string up a hill, Deborah, but I would appreciate it if you would just let everyone know that we're still looking for this information. Okay.
Absolutely understood, Commissioner Potter. And Michael George is on this call, and I imagine that if it's available, he'd be interested in this information as well. So we'll continue to look for it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. And go ahead, Sherry, you're taking it's taking you a long time to get through the list. I'm sorry. You're on AFC grant now.
Yep. And that, we'll bring that back in November and see where we're at with that. So that's been put on hold. So okay. I think that's the plan, to bring it back for November.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Sherry. And thank you, everyone, for participating in that. New business. I don't believe we have any. Mm-mm. As far as our committee work group, we have our ongoing committee of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we now know that this is a rather broad-reaching concept that's going through residential lending and so forth and so on. And it's something that it's very important that we keep our constituents, our stakeholders, aware of what's going on out there. So I know there's people out there like Dave Town that has a big mailing list that is keeping a lot of people informed on this. And I want us to do the same, and Stan and Heather are going to do that in just a second. But it's a lot of times appraisers just keep their nose to the grindstone and they keep doing the same thing they've done over and over and over again. And sometimes you need to change the wording you might have used in an appraisal for years and years and years to correspond with what is considered the appropriate contemporary method of communicating whatever thought that might be associated with that. So we're not taking a political position here in any sense, but we're trying to keep everyone aware of what's going on. And in particular, now we have some potential changes to USPAP incorporating DEI considerations. So go ahead, Stan and Heather.
Thank you, Chair Potter. I think you just gave my report, our report.
No, I didn't. No, I expect a lot more from you, Stan.
Well, I appreciate it. The commission, as Chair Potter noted, we just want to keep our constituents aware of what's going on at the federal level and even really at any other level if we obtain information to that effect. But to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion in the appraisal process. I have been attempting and working to keep track of anything that comes over the internet, any reports of studies, laws, bills that are proposed or presented, and USPAP changes, et cetera. I reached out to Commissioner Sullivan and also to a couple of other appraisers, including Dave Town and Kathy Walsh, who are kind of also on top of this topic and watching out for information. And I compiled what we found were the four most relevant current elements at the federal level in terms of some bills and also the AQB effort to hold forums to explore the education requirements on fair housing laws and valuation, and also changes in USPAP. I asked Sherry Honeywell to distribute to the commissioners a summary of this legislation, and I assume everybody got it. There's only really four bullet point items. The top one, HR 4495, even though that doesn't directly pertain to and affect appraisers necessarily, I thought it was fairly relevant and pertinent to highlight some of what's going on the fair housing front. And this is an act to provide down payment assistance to first generation home buyers, as it's stated in the act, to address multi-generational inequities to access home ownership and to narrow and ultimately close the racial home ownership gap in the United States. And at this time, the most recent data I have on that in terms of its status is a House committee, the Committee on Financial Services, held a hearing about the bill on July 20th, and that's the most current information I have in terms of where it is in the process. Sometimes this legislative process, they have to go through multiple committee levels and either the House and or the Senate, and then either the House has to pass it and it goes to the Senate or vice versa before they ever consider voting on it to become a law or not. So we'll just continue to monitor this and the others. Others are HR 2553, which is the FAIR Act, or Fair Appraisal and Inequity Reform Act. Data that we have on that right now is it's in discussion draft form only and pending action by the House Committee on Financial Services. Again, we'll keep monitoring that to see if it moves forward to any other committee and or to a full House for the vote. There's also the PAVE Act, which is an interagency task force on property appraisal and valuation equity. that President Biden established. And it's an interagency task force that includes several federal agencies and offices. And at this time, I understand things are only in a discussion phase. July 11th, Representative Waters sent a letter to the PAVE task force asking that they move quickly to implement the planned administrative actions and also provide the committee with a clear timeline for implementation of each action. And I have no information that there's actually been a response to her letter on that request. And then the AQB, as noted, is going to hold a forum on September 12th at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to explore the education requirements on fair housing laws. And also the third exposure draft, I believe it's the third exposure draft, isn't it, Heather? Thank you. For USTAP is come out and pending input and comment regarding changes to USTAP that will more extensively highlight the issue in terms of all the different anti-discrimination laws that are on the books and ethics requirements that appraisers need to be perhaps a little bit more attuned to than maybe they are currently. So that's all I've got on that now. Heather, did you have anything you wanted to add on this topic?
I think you did a great job covering that. Thank you, Commissioner.
Hey, Heather.
I appreciate it.
Heather, you,
yep.
Is there some states that are, since you, you know, your reach is multi-state here, is there some states that are already requiring some type of DEI education as a licensing requirement, a continued education requirement for appraisers?
Yeah, last I checked, which has been a little while, but New York, Minnesota, California, have all implemented various, I think New York has the most stringent with 7 hours of fair housing and appraisal bias training. Minnesota, I think, is 4 hours. And then California actually has two different types. They have cultural competency and then an appraisal bias or valuation bias requirement. So I'm seeing a lot more of the states kind of pick up. I think many states are waiting to see what's required by the AQB. That's kind of what's on the agenda for the September 12th meeting, is to discuss how we should incorporate more training into qualifying and continuing education. I would just tell everybody, you know, there's so many webinars and resources out there to educate yourself on understanding not just what the problem and, you know, what the thought leadership throughout the industry is like thinking about, but also some of the solutions that they're proposing, which would dramatically change how we become appraisers and complete appraisals. I just think it's really important that we're all staying on top of that. And they've really made those resources available to us to understand what the conversation is. So definitely take advantage of those. I mean, it's incredible when you sit through some of those meetings, the amount of information you learn and the different perspectives you gain on things. It's really invaluable.
Yeah. And also, I think language that you used in your appraisals years and years ago might not be appropriate today. Phrases that you may have used. There was a lawsuit in California, I believe, where a lady appraiser was criticized for language she had in her appraisal that, you know, just it's not something that is considered consistent with DEI today. So it's good to keep up on things like that and review your work. We as appraisers always pick up an old report and find the one closest to the last one you did and go with it and proof it and reproof it. And so I think there's a lot of different aspects to this that we need to keep on top of. Okay. Thank you very much, Dan.
Chair Potter.
Yeah, sure.
This is Beathen, Scott Beathen. There was an article this morning in the New York Times on just this topic. It was a fairly critical article. It criticized appraisers in general, but a specific situation. So this is a hot topic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It may not be a hot topic to you until you become the hot topic. That's a good way to think about it. So, okay. I thank you very much. We'll just stay on this and we'll have a nice discussion on ongoing in our meetings. So I appreciate everyone's participation. Okay, moving on. Item 5, Commissioner Executive's Report, information only, no action required. Program operations, Deb.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. So we've, as you're looking at the screen, we've got some statistics for you. And before, I just wanted to share a little bit of information that Mike George shared with me in our chat on the side. We don't have a pretty polished report right now, but in answer to our last question about where they are in terms of processing, he was able to share with me that for the workload data, they are actually processing, the licensing team is processing appraiser applications that were received today, and they only have 7 unread emails within their queue that they're answering. So they are very much on top of the workload and keeping that abreast. And he thinks that he can help us with getting an ongoing report to share with this commission. Oh, so
thank you very much, Deborah. That just real time solutions. You're amazing.
Oh, no, okay. not me. That's Mike. That was not me. But yes, we will get this on an ongoing basis because I know we're all interested in hearing how they're doing. So right now we're looking at the complaint cases, and we have for the total cases 107 that have been closed. We received 7 in intake, and this was through January 2022. 24 of the cases have gone to the investigations, and 8 are with the legal. 25 are in management review. That can mean that they just haven't been assigned out yet, or they're in some place in between in the streamline. And then it looks like we have 1 that has been reopened, and 172 is the grand total on our complaint cases right now.
Deborah?
This is Commissioner Elston. I was just wondering how that compares year over year.
I don't think we produce that. I think that report is one that we have not decided as a group to continue with. So year over year, you see ebbs and flows in complaint cases, but they remain pretty much the same.
Hey, Deborah, Commissioner Sedor, I don't think I've ever been familiar with seeing a case status reopened. What would be involved in how or why a case would be reopened? Has it been the complainant appeals the fact that it didn't proceed to any action and wants it reconsidered, or what?
That would typically be what would happen. I think my colleagues from the compliance unit are on, and I'm actually going to let them speak to that because that's not my wheelhouse. Mr. Dutra, are you available to answer Commissioner Sedor's question?
Certainly. Good morning. Thank you for the question, sir. So there could be any number of reasons why something was reopened. Additional information may have come in. We may have closed the case, initially discontinued. I'll use this term, discontinued our active inquiry because something else was happening with that particular case. A very common situation that happens is that if there's any sort of civil litigation that is currently ongoing that is of the same matter, that something that our office is looking at, we may discontinue our active inquiry to allow that civil litigation to play out. That allows both parties basically some relief from having to respond to multiple different entities at a time.
Thank you, Bill. Good to see you.
Nice to see you, sir.
I appreciate it.
No problem.
This is Commissioner Elston. I just have a quick question to dovetail on the earlier discussion. I know you can't discuss case specifics, but it would be interesting to know how many of these cases might have to do with bias.
I wouldn't be able to tell you that, ma'am. I'm sorry. That is not something that, you know, we are currently tracking of specifically. We are looking at a specific case because of bias.
Okay. Just wondered, based on the discussion, if it has been a big issue in the state of Washington.
No, unfortunately, I'm not prepared to talk about that right now. So I apologize.
No problem. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, Deborah.
Okay, so for our licensing count, you're going to see that we've broken it down by our licensees, our total licensee count, and then also just our Washington licensee count. We've also done a pretty good job of putting it within age brackets so that we have an idea of how many may be retiring out of the profession and how many we have coming into the profession. So numbers holding pretty steady. So currently the grand total for everyone who is licensed is 3,148. Of those that are only specifically Washington licensees, there are 2,373. And this was a snapshot in time. So this was as of July 25th, 2022. Okay. Any questions on this slide?
Okay. So the top includes all people out of state and in state, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yep. The bottom. Okay. I see. Yep. Okay. Well, it looks like our ages are starting to be more in the 45 to 55 age. Mm-hmm. 45 to 64. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And there, it sounds like there was a question.
Oh, mine was the same question. Sorry, okay. Deborah. I just wanted clarification on if it was out of state or just singular Washington licenses.
Right. And these reports have been interesting, having it broken down by age. This is something that was new for the Real Estate Commission and some of the other ones that I've, you know, boards and commissions I've interacted with. But it's interesting to look at the demographic changes in the different industries and how it does play into the importance of making sure that new licensees are getting into the profession so that it remains robust and viable. And, you know, as we see our populations starting to retire, we want to make sure that there are still good numbers in the industry. Yeah. Some other boards and commissions have taken it upon themselves to start doing outreach to different schools. And that may be something that this commission will think about in the future. Okay, I think... Okay. Do we have one more slide? Yes, we do. All right. I'm not sure if I've shared this with this commission or not, but we wanted to give you an idea of our structure, a new structure from kind of a high level of how we have now completed our reorganization within our Business and Professions Division. What we're seeing is now we are fully functioning. Getting our work done. So our assistant director is Jennifer Clausen. We have within that 6 units that are reporting to her, which includes our boards and commissions support services. That's myself and Sherry and Sandy and Sydney and Kim Hall. So there's 4 of us currently. Our administrator, Rick Storvik, recently retired as of Friday. He has decided, I know, so he's decided to go and sit on a beach and play with his grandchildren instead of being here with us today. But we will be hopefully hiring a new administrator soon to lead this group. But in the meantime, we're still here to support you. working very closely with our colleagues in the Centralized Investigations and Audit Unit, and Bill Dutra just spoke on behalf of that unit. So one of the groups that you haven't had an opportunity to meet yet is our Regulatory Compliance and UCC Firearms Unit. They will be here with us in our fall meeting in November. So we'll have representatives from that group to talk to you about the work that our compliance unit's doing. The Licensing and Customer Service Support Services, Mike George is with us in this meeting, and you've had an opportunity to hear from him and his assistant administrator, Julia Manley, and the work that they're doing. And you've interacted with quite a few of the members from the licensing staff. So today, I am really happy to introduce you to members from our prorate and fuel tax unit that will be joining us to talk about the work that they do. What's interesting is that the Business and Professions Division, we are very diverse in the work that we do. And one of the areas that is the most diverse from the licensing work that we do is our prorate and fuel tax. So in just a few minutes, my colleague Catherine Adaman will be talking about what they do in prorate and fuel tax. Next slide. Is there another slide real quick, Sherry? Okay, so this is just a breakdown on the boards and commission support services organizational chart. So it shows who you're interacting with. Rick, as I said, Rick has left us, but myself, we have in the role of supporting this board. We're going to do a little bit of shifting. This is an older slide, but we have Sandy Bauer, who's on the call and we've spoke with. We have Sherry Honeywell directly reporting to her. So this slide is flipped. And then we have Cindy Muley, who is supporting Kim Hall. What you're going to notice is that we have 9 boards and commissions, and we have a lot of members that we're supporting with those boards and commissions. Something that we have realized as we've been moving into this functional alignment that we haven't had an opportunity to do is train and support our commissioners and board members. This is particularly important with our regulatory boards that have the authority to actually regulate the professions that they are licensed in. But it's really important for all of our board members. So we'll be talking to you about either at our November meeting or in our first one at the beginning of the year, having a board training where we will take part of our board meeting and actually do a training. And this will include our information on the Open Public Meetings Act and some of the other things, and about some standardizations that we're working on within our boards and commissions. So more to discuss at the next meeting, but I just wanted to give you a quick overview of what we're looking at. I've highlighted all of the boards that we actually have vacancies that we're trying to work on filling those positions at this time. Luckily, the Appraiser Commission is not one of them. Happy to say that you are fully staffed and glad to not have to go out and be filling those vacancies at this time. Any questions?
Yeah. Hey, Deborah, Commissioner Sedor. So does the regulatory compliance, UCC firearms, I call it division or arm, are they the ones now that will be interacting with the ASB when they come to audit us regarding compliance and such?
I think that when ASB comes for compliance, it's going to be different. They're actually probably going to interact with all aspects of it, because there will be parts of it that the licensing will be interacting with them. There will be parts for our investigative units, and there will be parts, you know, that will be our regulatory. So probably, I hope, only the boards and commissions and prorate and fuel tax won't be interacting during that audit, but all the other lines of business will be working with them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that said, if there's no other questions, I am going to turn it over to my colleague, Catherine, to talk to you about prorate and fuel tax.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for allowing me to come today and talk to your meeting. It's my first introduction into the boards and commissions area. This is only the second time I've had an opportunity to join a meeting, so I really appreciate you allowing me to come. I am Catherine Ottman. I'm the Assistant Administrator of Prorate and Fuel Tax. What is Prorate and Fuel Tax? Basically, we are a section in BPD with 69 employees that are tax examiners and auditors. Our budget is $13.1 million, no biennium, but we are supported by transportation dollars specifically. So that means our funding comes directly from the fuel tax, which is a tax you pay at the pump when you buy your gas or diesel. We are one of the six operational areas in BPD, and we are organized into four different groups in our area. So there's the fuel tax and unlicensed refunds group, the motor carrier services group, the audit group, and administration and office support services. So basically, what do? We collect the tax that is imposed upon fuel that is used for promotional vehicle motor vehicles upon the roads of this state. That tax is at 49.4 cents per gallon. So unlike a sales tax, which is assessed on, say, the full purchase price of an item, we're actually taxing per gallon. The rates are set by statute. So it's not something that moves quite frequently. It'll have to be, you know, a bill passed and a law passed for that rate to change. Our tax is actually imposed as something called the rack, the terminal rack. So a terminal rack is a big storage facility where fuel is housed in the millions of gallons, usually. And then trucks pull up and fill up in the back, in the bulk fuel in the back, and take it to the gas station. So that is where the tax actually applies. And about 300 fuel companies pay most of the fuel tax in the state. They pass that tax on down to you at the pump, and it's included in the price at the pump. There are some exceptions to the fuel tax. It's usually exports out of state by licensed suppliers. If it wasn't taxed previously, that tax will be imposed on the first entity, what is called below the rack. So if fuel is, say, brought in the back of a truck across the state line from Oregon, it will be taxed as soon as it crosses the state line on the first taxable entity. So the customer base for us are fuel tax licensees, which are called suppliers, distributors, blenders, aircraft distributors, terminal operators, carriers, and then there's a small group of home heating oil. That list is in proportion to the amount of tax those groups would pay. So suppliers pay the largest amount, and those are the largest fuel companies usually in the world, you can imagine. So we are also a member jurisdiction of two international agreements that are providing a single licensing point for vehicle registration and fuel tax reporting for commercial vehicles that cross state and international lines. So those are semi-trucks. So we're also regulating the semi-truck industry, and they pay their taxes, their fuel taxes, and the registration for their plates in a much different way than you and I do. These are two, they participate in international agreements to allow them to cross state and international lines easily. I know for us, that's easy. We just get in our car and we go where we want. But for them, semi-drivers or semi-truck companies have to pay their taxes to every single state and Canadian province they drive in. So the IFTA and IRP agreements, they're called the International Registration Plan, or basically the license plates, and the International Fuel Tax Agreement, or IFTA, which is the tax, the fuel tax they pay, are in these agreements that we have signed on to in the early 80s when they were first made to allow trucking companies to easily cross lines without having to stop at each state's line and purchase a permit to pass through that state. Basically, the unit in this is going to issue a IFTA license to the companies and the vehicles. They put a decal on the side of the pickup or the semi-truck. So, you know, about yay big. It's colorful. It'll say the year, and it'll have a state outlined in it. So you can actually tell where that trucking company is from. by just looking at the side of the semi truck. It's so in Washington, it's blue this year. It has a picture of Washington and it will say 2022 on it. Every year, every truck that passes through state lines without a special permit has to have one of those stickers on the side of it. So when you're going down the freeway next time and you see a semi, you know, turn your head to the left or right and look for the sticker, you'll know exactly where that company is from. And that is how they register and pay their fuel taxes. We also process the commercial vehicle registrations, which is the license plates and credentials that allow the fees, license plate fees, to be distributed across the entire country. So when a semi truck driver wants to pass through, they need to pay plate fees to every state they pass through. The vehicle for that is the international registration plan. They come to us, they tell us the mileage they're going to drive, and they get a plate from us. And then we proportion the fees to where they're actually going to drive their vehicle on a yearly basis. So they come in every year for that. So the motor vehicle fuel taxes for IFTA that are imposed for every single state and Canadian province, we pass through to a clearinghouse every month and it nets up there. So other states are doing the same for Washington, Idaho, Oregon, British Columbia. They will collect from their drivers, their base drivers, the fees that were due to the state of Washington for those vehicles passing through our borders and tearing up our roads. And the fuel tax's primary purpose is to fix the roads, you know, get in bridges, produce public transportation options for the citizens of our state. Another section that we have in Prudent Fuel Tax is audit. So our audits are financial. They're not compliance. They are looking to see that these companies have properly paid their taxes to the state of Washington. We are required through the IFTA and IRP agreements to audit 3% of all licensees for the fuel IFTA and IRP program, so the trucking program. So we audit 3% of the trucking base every year. The audits can result in refunds if they've overpaid. They can result in taxes owed to the state. They can also be no change if the companies were able to keep their books in good order. They may not owe anything. So basically, in 2021, we collected $1.6 billion in revenue for the Straight Transportation Department, and we had approximately 18,000 licensees. And the, you know, earlier I said 300 is on the fuel tax side, specifically the big fuel companies. The difference of that relates to trucking companies that are registered with us and having their vehicles on the road. We work quite frequently with the WSDOT and Federal Department of Transportation. We have partnerships with Washington State Patrol, OFM, our lawmakers, and the other states that are our jurisdictional partners, including tribal governments. So though we are not the same as the rest of BPD, and Deb kind of alluded to it, well, they have a process they're going through and we're not participating because we're doing something different. We are similar in a lot of ways. We do license companies. We also do training of businesses. We have customer education. We have audits, compliance. We have policy actions, and we have online services. So we do have a lot of similarities in the type of work we're doing, though the customer base is obviously very, very different. And the purpose we have is a slightly different purpose with tax collection. And basically high level, that's PRFT. Does anybody have a question they want to ask me? I know sometimes people do have some fuel questions. I'd be happy to answer them.
Catherine, it sounds like we're good. I appreciate you letting us know about what your mission is. And I see you collect some pretty serious money there, $1.5 billion. So glad you're on our side.
Yeah. Truthfully speaking, in state tax collection, sales tax is number one. Marijuana tax is number two.
Oh.
And fuel tax is number three, a close third. So we're the third highest tax collection in the state of Washington.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
No problem. And thank you all for letting me attend.
Okay. Yep. Thanks, Deb. Do you have anything else you want to add to your part there?
No comments. I was just a little bit shocked by Catherine's statistics there on where fuel tax falls in the
the line, but that's interesting. So thank you, Catherine. Appreciate it. She's been helping us out and doing these presentations for each of our boards and commissions. So we appreciate her time.
Okay. And does that wrap up the commission executive report, Deborah?
Yes, it does. Thank
you. Okay. Thank you. Okay. To the commission, any other business? I have none. Anyone else? Okay. Action items from this meeting.
Mm-hmm. That's me. I'm going to email Bob the link for the real estate commission meeting on the 22nd. And then we're going to get out on listserv the update on the log update, that change.
Okay.
We're going to get that out on listserv. So those are and then we're going to bring back DEI for next, you know, on the agenda next time. So that's what I have.
Okay. And then we'll keep working on that progress report on processing applications.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Any agenda items for the next meeting?
I have, we're going to bring back the ASC grants, see what, you know, get that moving. And then next year we'll have the calendar to set the calendar for 2023. Okay. So that'll be on the agenda. Okay. So that's all I have, Commissioner Porter. Yeah,
and election of officers too.
Okay.
Yeah. Or a chair and a vice chair. Yeah. We do that in the November meeting.
Oh, you do? Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks, Commissioner Potter.
Yeah.
Commissioner Potter, can I bring up one thing I did not mention during any other business?
Yes, yeah, sure. Certainly.
Okay. Thank you. I was contacted by our licensing unit about the upcoming October Aero conference to find out if this commission would have any interest in sending a commissioner to attend.
I think that would be good if we have a commissioner that has the time to do that. I personally would not. I'm speculating that Scott, vice chair, would not. Is that correct, Scott?
I don't know that I don't want, I don't know the dates, and I will say this. I think that the Aero conference is actually useful.
Yes.
What I don't want to do is have any appearance of, you know, misuse of taxpayer dollars. But I have been to some of the events around the Aero conference, and I actually thought they do a pretty good job, and there's a lot to be learned and gained from that. So,
when and where is it?
It's in October. I'm just reaching out, Mike.
I can speak to it a little bit. I actually went to the last one, cause they usually have just two conferences a year and they talk about a lot of different things. There's portions that are geared towards regulators such as myself. And then there's also portions that are geared towards commissioners such as the commissioners here on this call. They do talk about things such as PAREA. They do talk about things such as the fair housing bills that are coming through at a national level, as well as asking around for different jurisdictions, which is extremely helpful. Things like the rulemaking that we're currently going through, you know, creating the connections with different jurisdictions, different states is extremely helpful. So that way we don't have to reinvent the wheel, as it were, you know, when we're going through our processes. So it's been extremely helpful. But October 14th through the 17th, it is in Washington, D.C. And again, last time I went, I was able to make some really, really helpful connections with both the different, all the different jurisdictions that attend, as well as some of the national organizations, being able to see them in person and just network. So it was really helpful, really valuable. So it'd be great if we were able to get one commissioner to come along as well, because I think there's this the agenda they have set. It's going to be a lot of really interesting things. It's going to be a lot of good learning that happens.
Are they also doing it in conjunction? Because a lot of times the fall Aero meeting has been with either the AQB or the Standing Board, sometimes the Board of Trustees.
Yep. So they have, so the AQB's there. They have the, all the different national organizations are in attendance and there.
But my question is, a lot of times there is a meeting from the foundation the day before. So it might be like either AQB, ASB, or the Board of Trustees. Do you happen to
know? No, I don't see that on the current agenda from them specifically. So nothing.
I went to the Aero conference sometime back when I was vice chair. I think the information I got from that was very useful. Gave me a greater understanding of appraiser licensing regulation and why some of the things are done that are done and some of the problems and this and that. And I would just toss this out to the rest of the group here. I would ask that we send Scott Beetham to the Aero conference this year, assuming his schedule permits. If somebody would like to put that in the form of a motion so we could discuss it, I would look to that.
This is Commissioner Elston. I would just like to quickly ask the other members of the commission if someone else is already planning to attend, in which case they would be there already.
Good idea. Is anyone expecting to attend?
Not at this time. There is a chance that I would attend, but I don't have it as a scheduled trip at this point.
Okay. Is that good for you, Claire?
Yes, thank you. And okay. Heather would be great too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So if somebody would make a motion about Scott attending and second it, we can discuss it and move forward with it.
I so move that we send Vice Chair Beetham to the Aero Conference in October.
I second the motion.
Okay. Let's have a little discussion. Any, Claire, do you have any further comments one way or the other about this?
If Scott can't attend or doesn't want to, I would like to also nominate Heather, who I think would be excellent.
Okay. Motion maker accept that amendment to his motion?
Yes.
Yeah, and the second?
Yes, second.
Okay, all right.
I agree with that as well. I think that Commissioner Sullivan is pretty wired into all these things as well.
Okay.
More than me, I would say.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. Deborah, thank you for bringing that to our attention. We haven't done that for a few years. And like I say, when I did it, it was very, very worthwhile. So I appreciate that very much.
Well, absolutely appreciate that. So Scott, we will be in contact with you or Commissioner Sullivan to talk about travel arrangements. Sherry can help you coordinate on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, other business. Any other business? I have none. Does anyone else have any other business? Okay, action items, agenda items. We've been through that. Okay, now we're going to open it up for public comment. What I'd like to do on the public comment is I limit that to 3 minutes. And if you happen to be a head of an organization, appraisal organization, such as the Appraisal Institute, American Society of Farm Managers, Rural Appraisers, ACOW, something like that, speak your 3 minutes when you are in the queue. And then if we have time at the end, we'll let you talk with some concluding comments if you have any. Because we appreciate the time and effort you make to your organizations. And I think that would be a worthwhile way to handle it. So anyway, we'll start out with, and Sherry, can you help me with the queue here on who is waiting to talk?
Yes, Commissioner Potter. I have Michael Imes who would like to speak.
Okay, Michael, go ahead. You're on. Michael?
Yep,
Michael?
I got it.
Oh, okay.
Spacebar didn't unmute me. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I had to find the button.
Okay.
So, hello, commissioners. Thank you for your hard work. State of Washington DOL employees, also thank you for serving us. I just wanted to clarify what was going on with the blacklisting situation. I didn't feel it was since we didn't have the email probably showing all the details, I just wanted to give you a brief overview of it. And the reason we brought it to REAC was because we were hoping, or at least I was hoping, that REAC and or DOL would work somehow with the real estate licensing people also. I don't know if that requires in the background or if it has to go through their commission or how it all works, but I was hoping the DOL and REAC could get involved because obviously nobody else is. And in brief, what had happened was several years ago, I filed a complaint where me, another appraiser, and a home inspector were being barred from seeing properties in the listing. At the conclusion of that investigation, I was notified by DOL that since they hadn't actually tried to stop somebody, they couldn't do anything. But once they did make an effort to stop somebody, then they could step in and do something. So this time, I did have it actually happen to me. It wasn't another appraiser. So I refiled a complaint for the same thing. And then DOL comes back and says, well, we can't do anything because that's a federal issue. When, yes, it is, but it's also an RCW violation. It's a misdemeanor, what they did. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You can't go tell your licensee people not to violate state law. And I don't want to start a war between agents and appraisers, but there are multiple appraisers I've talked to, they're all having this problem, many of them in smaller communities where everybody knows everybody. And it's just nothing's being done. So I thought, okay, I'm going to pick the football up and run with it since I have an actual case. At this time, I've just had the doors shut on me everywhere I turn. And I guess the next step is to actually start filing criminal complaints with the AG or the county prosecutor or somebody for blacklisting, because we can't get it solved in another manner in the background, such as in their core class advising them that you can't do this. It violates public trust, violates state law, violates federal law, and have the DOL actually enforce it. If I violate USPAP, I get enforced. If I violate any other law, I get, investigated. Okay. So why isn't you all doing anything? I hope that's under 3 minutes. Thanks.
It is your 3 minutes. Thank you, Michael. As we send the meeting, Bob is going to attend the real estate agents, real estate commission, brokers commission in September. And that's one effort, and you appear to be making an effort on your behalf specifically. I think that's where it's at right now. And hopefully we'll monitor that. And as things progress, we will keep trying to seek a solution within the mission of the Appraiser Commission and the real estate agents, and let it play out as it's currently scheduled. And I think that's kind of where it's at right now. So I appreciate your comments, Michael. Okay, next speaker.
I have Bob.
Bob Macedo?
Yeah, he just put Bob.
It's
probably Bob.
It's Bob.
Okay.
I don't know how to enter my last name. So.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And real quick, a lot of the things that have been discussed today in this meeting have been addressed in the Appraisers Coalition of Washington newsletters, which we publish monthly now. So if you don't get our newsletter, you probably need to send me your email address so I can put you into our contact list. It's a little over 2,000 appraisers within the state of Washington right now. That way you would know what we're up to. With that, I also have asked the commission as well as the DOL about information regarding appraisal complaints. And in 2021, Fannie announced that they had scanned 14 million appraisals completed between 2019 and 2020, and they were scanning specifically for bias. bias items. More recently, Phil Crawford, the voice of the appraisers, did a podcast, and he announced that states were beginning to receive unsigned letters of complaint against appraisers within those states. So I was just curious, and I've asked this of DOL, and I never got a response. I'm curious as to if the complaints that the DOL's recently received in regard to appraisers is from Fannie Mae and is regarding bias.
Oh, I'm going to pause your time there, Bob. Hold on just a second. Hey, Deborah.
Yes, Commissioner. I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. We talked about this, and this came in after the agenda was set and everything. And you, can we put? First of all, is this information that the public should have access to? Is it subject to FOIA or anything like that, or is it something that is privileged? Or
are you asking about complaint files?
Well, the information that Bob was talking about, he said these get Bob, what are you talking? The form
talking
of these
about,
were unsigned
I'm talking
letters.
About the complaints that have been filed by Fannie Mae against appraisers.
On bias.
I'm just trying to get a feel for those numbers, if they even exist. I don't know that the state of Washington has received any complaints from Fannie Mae.
Okay. Thank you. Your time is still paused. Deborah, is that information that is the public is entitled to have or what? I don't want to ask for something that is privileged or something like that.
No, that would not be. You can request a copy of any complaint that you know of, but it wouldn't be something that we would be putting out on our website. Unless there was an action, no.
Would there be something that you could report to us and saying that we have received complaints from Fannie Mae? Can you say something like that?
I'm going to defer to my compliant unit because that wouldn't be information that I would have.
Okay.
Mr. Dutra?
Hello. So, Commissioner Potter, yes, we do receive complaints from Fannie Mae. They've been coming in for as long as I've been involved with this.
Uh-huh.
We did not program our system to say we're only reviewing something because of bias.
Okay. Okay.
We receive complaints that, and they're generally stating is that Fannie Mae is reporting this to you. We identified this, and it's usually ended with, we have no further comment regarding this. We leave it up to the states to review and make appropriate determinations.
Okay. Something and this is with respect to a specific appraiser. Their letter is attached to a specific appraiser.
Appraisal. And
appraisal,
they identify what they believe is not sufficient or is in question for them.
Okay. All right.
But I could not sit here and sit unless I counted everything that came in and looked at everything and said, well, this one might be biased or this one might not be biased. I couldn't run a report that I'm aware of today that says that's what this is about.
Okay. So on Deborah's report earlier, we had a situation where she said you had 107 new complaints. Was that right, Deborah?
I think your memory is better than mine, Commissioner Potter, but I believe that's correct.
Okay. So it seems to me like that's kind of a typical number for our the number of complaints that come in. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to me like there would be an extraordinary number coming in from Fannie Mae. I don't know, Bob, you see where I'm headed with that?
Yeah, I do, Dean. And I'm just looking to see if there was any significant difference in the number of complaints from Fannie. And I don't, 107 seems like a pretty high number to me, but I don't know what you typically get.
I think that's pretty typical from years past, if my memory is serving me appropriately.
That's pretty typical.
Yeah. So I don't think there's been a significant uptick, which we might be able to say may be attributable to bias. Okay. I think that may be the best answer you're going to get. I'm going to resume your time now, okay?
Thank you.
You're back on the clock, buddy.
Okay. So I want to thank everybody for letting me talk today, and I hope we can work out this racial bias, or not the the blacklisting piece, because that is important. There are several appraisers in the state that it has affected. There's a couple active cases right now, and we do need to tie that one up so that agents can be held accountable. With that, I am finished, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Mm-hmm. Okay, who is next, Sherry?
I have Jay Immelt, who would like to speak.
Okay, Jay.
Good morning, everybody. I again echo the remarks. Thanks to everybody for their work, both the commission and the DOL staff. I am a certified general fee appraiser, licensed by the state, and I am also certified by Department of Revenue as an assessor. In that role, I am also the vice president of the West Puget Sound chapter of IAAO, which represents basically the South Sound counties, the assessor departments and employees of the South Sound counties, as well as the Department of Revenue staff. And I will tell you that there's great interest in this idea of the portability between the assessor licensing and appraisal licensing. A lot of folks that are work as appraiser assessors would like to be cross-pollinated as Department of Licensing fee appraisers. Having said that, though, and looking in through the WACs and the RCWs, this is going to be a daunting task. It's going to take a lot of rewriting of WACs to deal with how you're going to address assessor experience hours. We don't do things quite the same way as we do as fee appraisers. We don't create the same kind of forms or individual reports. And so there's going to be a lot of rewriting of statutes and WACs. And I appreciate that the commissioners would have input into that, but I would encourage you to include people on the assessor side of it who are maybe both licensed as appraisers, fee appraisers, and assessors to help draft that language and deal with those situations. I don't think any of the commissioners are also certified by Department of Revenue. I could be wrong on that, but I would just encourage you to enlist or seek the input of people from the assessor side of it too when you're drafting that language. That's that point. Secondly, you talked about the going towards the AQB minimum experience hours requirements. And I just wonder, I pose this question, does that include not only going to the lower hour requirement, but also the time in which those hours are accumulated? The AQB standard is they're accumulated in an unlimited period of time, whereas currently in the state of Washington, it's limited to a 7-year period. So I wonder if you're going to be including the AQB minimum with respect to the amount of time that the hours are accumulated, as well as reducing the hours to 1,000 hours. Lastly, in looking at the graph as to the age grouping of appraisers in our state, I would find that quite alarming, to be frank. Basically, it's all a bunch of old white guys like me. And in the under 30 group, you have 45 licensed appraisers that are under 25. I just think that's horrible. And we've really got to do so much more to encourage new people to join the profession. Okay. And Jay? That's all I have.
Okay, Jay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, Chair Potter.
Yes.
Can I make a quick comment to Jay's last comment?
Certainly.
This is Commissioner Sedor. So one thing that I was heartened by was seeing the number of trainees who were in the younger age categories. The total of all those trainees was higher than the number of older appraisers. And so I'm hopeful that most, or lucky, maybe all of those trainees will get their licenses and continue to move on up over time. So I'm a little more optimistic.
Yeah, I saw that too, Stan, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Okay, Sherry, you have the next speaker.
Yep, Dallas, you're up.
Dallas, how are you?
Hey, thank you guys for letting me talk. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to echo what everybody else has said. Thank you all for, you know, the commission and the DOL for all the work you guys have put in, especially on the mass appraisal thing and AQB in Perea. I am actually a trainee. I got my trainee license in October 2021. So it was really encouraging when they, you know, the commission passed the AQB, you know, kind of thing, or approved it. And so I was like, you know, maybe I can get my license within a year. You know, that was really exciting. And, you know, I shared with my wife and everything like that. And it's been a tough year, you know, with the real estate, you know, market kind of crashing a little bit and, you know, inflation and all that stuff. And so I just kind of wanted to share my perspective as a trainee that's going through this. You know, it's really stressful because there's no guarantee that you're going to get your license. You know, you're working and spending all this time and trying to do these things. So I really appreciate all the work that you guys are doing to lower the barriers of entry, especially from the mass appraisal side coming in. I think that will really be a huge thing for me as a person who used to work at the assessor's office. I'm accredited as well as a mass appraiser. So it's been tough coming in as a trainee because you get no carryover. I have to start over zero like anybody else, you know, so. That's really encouraging to kind of see that stuff coming to fruition. And, you know, I'm really passionate sometimes about all this stuff because it does affect my livelihood. And, you know, I have to go home and explain to my wife, you know, what's going on and when I may be able to get my license and, you know, which also means, you know, more salary and that kind of thing. So, you know, these are really personal things, because, you know, I have a family and, with costs going up and everything like that, it's even more critical that I kind of get my license as soon as possible from my family's perspective. And so, you know, I'm doing all the things that I can to get that experience hours and all that stuff. So again, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for everything that you do. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dallas. Okay, Sherry, do we have anybody else?
Yeah, Dave Town wants, he's up next. Dave.
Okay, Dave. Dave?
There we go. I was trying to get the microphone turned on. My tuxedo is still in the dry cleaner, so I'll
leave it off
today. Just have a couple of comments here. Number one, I would like to ask the department to send out a reminder for these meetings during the week of the meeting. The last reminder we got was on the 8th of August, and I had to go back through my emails to find the link and so forth. So if you wouldn't mind, send the reminder out also like on Monday or Tuesday before the meeting. Second comment, I am also a recipient of a blacklisting situation that happened over a year ago, I think now. And it had to do with doing an assignment in a particular area and the real estate agent was involved and very cordial. Well, of course, I didn't come in at the stated contract price and the agent didn't like that. About a week or so later, I received another assignment in the same community, and that same agent was involved, and that agent notified the broker, the mortgage broker, that I was not to be allowed to do the appraisal, and that word got filtered down or sent down to the lender, and then they had to find another appraiser. A year ago, we were all so doggone busy that I didn't take any time to try to counteract what had happened to me. But this issue about blacklisting is absolutely critical. We cannot have licensees violating state law almost willingly. And so the DOL has got to put an end to this, and you've got to put a segment in the curriculum for real estate brokers that they may not violate our state law and the federal law in trying to get appraisers delisted from doing our work as independent people. So please take that under advisement, and thank Bob for bringing that up this morning again. Another comment I have here is the USPAP update course, the 7-hour course. The appraisal subcommittee sent a letter out to states saying that the current course basically doesn't meet the criteria of properly educating appraisers. I don't know what the status is here in the state of Washington for perhaps not requiring that 7-hour class. I realize we got a whole bunch of layers of bureaucracy here to get through to get that changed, but keep that in mind. Now, USPAP has also been extended one more year. It will take effect, or it will be in effect through the end of 2023. And so that means they may come out with another class. So keep that on your radar, folks, and stay up on that one. I also have a concern about the Fannie Mae complaints that we've been hearing about. And we were told during this meeting that you guys aren't keeping track of stuff from year to year. And I think that's an important.
Hey, Dave, you're timing out. Timing out.
All right. Thank you, Chair Potter.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Sherry, any more speakers?
No, that's all of them. And I looked over the questions in the chat and it looks like they've all been addressed already.
Okay.
Unless I missed something or if somebody has something else to say.
Did anyone on the commission, Justin Slack wants to know if we'll be getting CE certificates for attending today. Let's see, 10:50, we started at 9. I guess we will get our 2 hours in. So is that right, Deborah?
If we're not splitting hairs on the 10 minutes, then I think we would give CE certificates. If everyone would please put in the chat that would like to receive a CE certificate for today's meeting, that would be very helpful. So Sherry can capture that information and we'll produce those CE certificates.
Yeah, I think the hour is actually less break time. So 1 hour and 51 minutes. Would qualify. Does anyone have any information different than that?
Well, no, it's based off of 50-minute.
Yeah, 50 hours. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Heather comes to the rescue again. Thank you, Heather.
And I just want to remind everyone that the CE certificates, you only are allowed to use one CE certificate per renewal cycle.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I agree with that. And does any of the people that spoke, anything there that any of the commissioners would like to see on the next agenda? Okay, hearing none, I'll assume there was none. Okay.
Commissioner Potter?
Yes, sir.
It's Bob.
Bob, unmute.
Can I have one more second of your time, please?
You certainly can.
I want to go back to what Dave was referring to. As far as the USPAP, currently the state requires that we all take a 7-hour USPAP course for renewal. Mm-hmm. But the Appraisal Foundation, specifically the Appraisal Subcommittee, the Qualifications Board, et cetera, has posted in a letter that states have the option of requiring that or not requiring that until the new USPAP is put out, which is looking like more like 2024 right now. Mm-hmm. So we need the state to think about what they're going to require and not require for renewal. that option has been made to the states to require or not require. And I have a copy of that letter if anybody's interested, but I'm sure the DOL has it.
Yeah, I think it'd be good if you sent that to Deborah, and she can, our DOL appraisers, so it can get distributed. There's a couple of ways to think about that. I don't know how that's expressed in the WAC, but I think in the WAC, we have to take a USPAP course every cycle. It's also, we look back and decide, you know, even if you're taking the same course over again, it may seem to be a little redundant, but for the most part, every time I've taken USPAP, 95% of it is the same course anyway. It just serves as a refresher. So I think that whole thing might start with how it's described in the WAC, what we have to do. If it's described in the WAC that we have to take the USPAP course every 2 years, I think we're going to be taking the USPAP course every 2 years, even if it's the same course. I don't know. I would have to look at the WAC.
But what's been published, Commissioner Potter, is that what's in the current USPAP, as well as the USPAP training, is incorrect in regards to the whole bias issue. In fact, I talked with Peter Christensen, and he says that he's got cases right now where what's in the USPAP is actually hindering his cases, and what they're discussing of putting into the USPAP under the fourth section of the ethics rule, which basically it's almost two pages long,
right,
will help with these cases once it's added to the USPAP. But again, 2024 is a couple of days away. And if we're requiring appraisers to take a class that's providing misinformation, I think we're doing an injustice to those appraisers. And that's for you guys to decide. But I've said what I need to say on that.
Yeah, so I appreciate very much you bringing that up. Again, if it's in the WAC, I think it starts with the WAC, and whether or not the DOL has the power to waive what's in the WAC. Sherry, let's put this down as an agenda item for our next meeting, okay?
Yeah. And the other thing that this is Commissioner Sullivan, just to, like, since we're taking a look at it anyway, they also removed the end date to use PAP. So they just have a start date. So that might affect our ruling in WAC as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you look at the WAC to see if it says you have to have a use PAP every 2 year, every cycle?
I think it's at least part of our application. Okay. So I believe it's probably in the WAC. I'm pulling that up right now.
Commissioner Potter, this is Dave Towne.
Yes.
I believe it is in the WAC, but the WAC can be changed so that the wording can say something to the effect of, unless modified by the appraisal subcommittee or the AQB. So you might consider that as an addendum to the WAC.
But it is in the WAC. So yes, it would take a WAC change for us to weigh. Okay, yeah. And that's no simple thing to make, do a WAC change. Okay, I appreciate that information, Dave. Okay, we're going to have this as a discussion item in November. And is there anything else from any of the commissioners before I ask for a motion to adjourn? Okay, it is 10:58, and I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.